from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Dan Orlovsky on Jared Goff, who signed a $55 million a year extension this offseason. We'll talk plenty of him. Lions, as we're jumping around the Bills' schedule a little bit, the Bills play the Lions later in the year, December 15th. That's week 15, 4:25 game at Detroit. We'll talk about it with Nolan Bianchi. I'm distracted, though, Sal, because it's 8:05 in the morning, and I don't know what's going on down the hall, but there is a ton of pasta out in the bistro. Like, who's eating rigatoni at 8:05 in the morning?
I am.
Okay, well,
you're eating rigatoni
normally,
in there right now?
Yep.
I do know that normally, like, Odyssey, like, where we work in our building, a lot of times there's a sales meeting on Tuesdays, so the sales team gets together. So somebody might have said, hey, we got this new product, and we're selling, and there's advertiser. Could be something like that.
You know what I think it is? It's the
what?
It's the Taste of Buffalo this week, right?
See, that's what it is.
I think that's what it is.
That's right.
Yeah, Taste of Buffalo this week, which would explain why. Is there chicken parm out there also? There's no chicken parm. Okay. But
there is a container of just shaved Parmesan, though.
Just shaved Parmesan.
Cheese. Listen to this. I thought about grabbing that, but
Nolan, is it ever too early to eat heavy Italian food on a Tuesday?
No, I was actually going to ask if I'd come by.
I know, right? It sounds good.
Any veal available, or what we got going on?
Some little veal parm, maybe out there.
Yeah, I can go for just a couple Parmesan.
We have the Taste of Buffalo. It's been a staple here for probably about almost 30 years now in Buffalo. It's just great, and there's just vendors everywhere, and you go in and you buy tickets. What do they have anything like that in Detroit? Anything similar to that where all these different vendors come? I know there's a Taste of Charlotte actually was founded and started by a friend of mine who's a former Buffalonian based on the Taste of Buffalo. Do they have anything like that in Detroit?
Yeah, they got this thing. It's not necessarily in Detroit, but I would say one of the big kind of regional events of the year, like end of summer type deal. It's this thing called Arts, Beats, and Eats. Kind of sounds like it's a similar thing. You know, it's just a big fair with all these different restaurants and vendors, and they get pretty decent musical acts. I went there one time, and it was pretty awesome. It's something I kind of like try to make a point to go to, but time permitting, of course.
Now I'm getting hungry. I'm going to have to fight the urge not to go out and get some pasta in the next couple hours. We'll talk plenty of Detroit sports coming up here. Nolan Bianchi, if you want to follow him on Twitter, at Nolan Bianchi. I might have to sneak in a quick Berhalter rant at the end of this. I don't know. We'll see what Nolan thinks about the U.S. soccer team. But let's start with the Lions. So we're going through the Bills' schedule, Nolan, and is their offseason just completely about they paid Jared Goff? I mean, I know there's been other moves, but $55 million a year. I guess, are you surprised at all that he was able to get or that they were willing to give him basically the biggest quarterback contract in the league?
Well, first of all, the clip you guys played in the open to the show, I thought that was actually you guys, and I was like, man, they're really loving themselves some Jared Goff. But no, I think it was completely appropriate. It had to be done. I think he deserved it. I mean, like, this is a team who I think maybe you guys experienced it a little bit with the Bills, but like there's just always this feeling of like until the good things started happening, there was never a belief that the good things were going to happen. And I think that you need a quarterback who's level-headed, who's he's accurate and he's all those things, but he's a great leader. And I think that really shows up with this team. It's just kind of, I know some people balk at the price tag on his face, but ultimately I think it's a contract that he probably earned. And over the last 2 years, I mean, he has been playing like a top 10 quarterback. So I don't anticipate that this is going to hurt them in the slightest. You know, I don't see this as a situation where all of a sudden, you know, it may be Daniel Jones type situation where you're like, oh crap, you know, they got 3 years left and he's not playing very well. So it had to be done. And I think it's the right move.
Do you think, before just a quick follow-up, Sal, think when he got there that the Lions were always kind of open to this trajectory with him? Because I know where I stood, and I wasn't following it like day-to-day, but where I stood when they traded Stafford for Goff was, oh, they're taking the bad contract for the Rams, so, you know, they'll play Goff for a year. And whenever they can get out of the contract, they'll get out of the contract. Do you feel like the Lions approached it the same way and then pivoted once he started performing well? Or do you think they were always open to, no, this guy could be our quarterback for the long term?
You know, they have said since day one that he is not a bridge quarterback. And I think a lot of people found it hard to believe them at first. But, like, the message didn't change. You know, I thought that was kind of interesting. And that's, I don't know if I necessarily believed them at first of like, you know, come on, you know, this guy, he gets traded away and now you're all of a sudden going to like try to make him your franchise quarterback. I just didn't really buy it. And I don't know. That has been the message the entire time. I think he came out after his first or second year and Brett Holmes was saying, you know, it's so much harder to get better at quarterback than it is to get worse. And Jared Goff has gotten better at quarterback over the last couple of years. He's continued to grow his game. And so, yeah, I don't know. If there was any inclination that they were going to kind of, you know, make him a bridge quarterback, they did a very good job hiding it, and they never wavered from that message. So I do think that they always considered this a possibility. And, you know, dare I say, they were hopeful that this would happen.
So it's funny. I was actually going to ask a very similar question to Joe, but I'll follow it with this then. So what happened? Why? How did his trajectory get to this point? Is this Ben Johnson pixie dust around him, basically? Dan Campbell, the organization? Jared Goff himself obviously has a lot to do with it, but what happened?
It's probably a combination of a lot of those things. I think his relationship with Ben Johnson was really critical to kind of getting the entire ship turned around, like from a team standpoint. But it was actually one of the more fun, cool stories I've done over the last couple of years was right before the NFC Championship game, I went out to his high school. And I talked to his old high school coach, and I saw his yearbook quote, and it said, you know, you cannot get wrapped up. And it's a John Wooden quote. It was like, don't be influenced by, you know, praise or criticism. It's a weakness to get caught up in either one. I'm having these conversations with his coaches, and you kind of just, like, start to realize that this guy has always been very, very mentally tough. And I do think that has played a pretty big role in his success because like you mentioned, when he came here, he wasn't really the guy that people thought was going to be the next guy. You know, they kind of were waiting for him to mess up so they could say, okay, there it is. And, you know, I don't really know how I can explain it, but I do think while the nurturing, I guess, system of Ben Johnson and Dan Campbell was really important, I do think that Jared Goff is just that kind of guy. You know, I think this is kind of revealing his character instead of testing it, if you will.
So around him, what else has their offense or their offseason looked like? I know just from a fantasy perspective, it seems like Jameson Williams is going to be counted on more this year after not playing a ton in his first two seasons. But really, like, I guess outside of Goff, what's been the story of the Lions offseason?
Well, people getting paid everywhere. You got Penei Sewell getting the highest paid offensive lineman in the league. You got Amon-Ra St. Brown getting about $30 million a year. So it's been a season of paying their guys. But they've also done a really good job of just kind of continuing to supplement the pieces that they already have without breaking the bank. They went out and they got DJ Reader to play defensive tackle next to Aleem McNeil. They went out and they got Kevin Zeitler from Baltimore to fill in the hole that Jonah Jackson left behind at left guard. And so nothing too crazy, no big swings. I think a lot of the offense is going to look the same next year. But like you mentioned, Jameson Williams, I think he's going to be a guy next year. Really, really took off at the end of last season. And it doesn't look like the Lions were too motivated to get like extra competition in there. So definitely think that he's gonna have a season this year.
Is he like is he a complete type of receiver here? Is he being used in more gadget ways? I guess like if he really hits this year, I guess what is it going to look like? Is it going to be like all deep stuff? I'm still trying to figure out because it's still been a limited amount, like what type of receiver we're going to have here.
I think it's going to be a combination of all three. Like, I think you're going to see, because the big thing with them last year was that they couldn't really connect on a lot of deep passes and the timing just looked off and stuff like that. But he was making a lot of great catches over the middle, and that's kind of where he does a lot of his damage. He just catches the ball and runs, and nobody can really catch up to him. So absolutely they're going to keep leaning on him for the gadget stuff. But I also think that they I think they'll get creative with him. I think you'll see a little bit in every area.
Oh, and the other turnaround story here is really Dan Campbell and how he was viewed nationally when he was hired and biting kneecaps and he became a meme and jokes. Man, this guy has really done a great job as the head of that organization there. What's the feeling on Dan Campbell now and where it was versus where it is?
Man, yeah, it's all love. And I mean, the first season was rough, no doubt. And there were a lot of people who were questioning, like, oh, this is the guy who gets up here and he cries after the game when they're 0-11. And, you know, there were just a lot of things around the organization that didn't look good in his first year. But now, like, I'm struggling to, I don't want to, like, quite loft him into, like, Steve Yzerman territory yet. But, like, it's a similar thing where he's the man in town. Everybody absolutely loves him. I don't think there's a single person. I mean, you get random haters after like the NFC Championship and stuff like that. But for the most part, man, I don't know if there's ever been a coach with as high of an approval rating in this city.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Yzerman, obviously the foundation of lifting the cup three times is always going to help too.
Yeah.
He, like you mentioned, he got some criticism a lot, and I remember fighting with a lot of people on his behalf defending him for some of those calls in the NFC Championship game. Do you think he's going to keep going with that, with being as aggressive as he is on fourth downs? Because Brandon Staley got a lot of this same criticism 2 years ago, and what I've always tried to point out is he chickened out after that. Like, he went from the most aggressive coach at that stuff for his first year or two to he went below average his last two seasons with the Chargers. And I feel like Campbell, just because of his mantra, like the way he is, I almost feel like he's a strong enough personality that he'll just, like, I'm just going to keep being me and I don't care what you guys say about it.
100%. I think that would be the absolute wrong thing to do, is to completely change what got you here because of, you know, that's like kind of a results-based decision rather than a process-driven decision. So when it comes to a guy like him, like, I think people respect him so much because he doesn't change. And you hear that from all his assistant coaches. You hear that from all his players. And the fact that you know he's going for it and then he does go for it is something that's really – confidence boosting to these guys. And yeah, absolutely. I don't see that changing in the slightest. Maybe he might even go the other way where he becomes like more aggressive because he's just like, but, you know, I guess that remains to be seen. But I don't think it'll be a Brandon Staley situation where, you know, this breaks his brain or anything.
NFC North. So Lions are still the favorite. They're their second favorite to win the conference. So I don't think anyone thinks that they've taken a step back. Do you think, though, the division behind them has caught up a bit?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the Packers were playing such good football at the end of last season. The Bears were playing not bad football at the end of last season. They got a very good defense, a very good wide receiving core. They're working on the offensive line. And so if you just like kind of think that Caleb Williams is going to be anything, like I think you can kind of see them having like a 9-8 season at least this year. And then nothing would surprise me with the Vikings as well. Like they're just kind of the team that's always there. Kevin O'Connell is a good coach. I don't know if they're going to go with Sam Darnold or JJ McCarthy from RIP, but you know, they're just a team who always seems to be there, and it never surprises me when they are. But yeah, I think it's going to be a 2-horse race mainly between the Lions and Packers, but I still see the Lions kind of being a little bit ahead. But I was on a Green Bay radio station the other day. I said I could see it being a situation where it's like 13-4 and 12-5 in the division, you know. And somebody's going to end up a wild card, and that's a bummer. But, you know, I think it's going to be pretty stacked this year.
Wow, 12-13 wins. That's a lot, but a team that did go to the NFC Championship game last year. The Bills play them in December. A lot's got to happen between now and then. But if you had to pick out one area where maybe things aren't looking great for the Lions, or at least a questionable. What, I guess the way I'll ask it is this, Nolan, like, what's the concern area of the team going into training camp for fans?
Man, that's a tough one. I would still say the secondary, but I think that's like kind of the intrigue of this training camp is like, are these young guys going to be able to kind of step up? Because they overhauled the secondary last season. They brought in Cam Sutton. They brought in Emmanuel Mosley, and then Mosley, you know, never really got healthy, and then the Sutton thing worked out didn't work out for a variety of reasons, but his play wasn't, you know, even very good last year. So I do think that there are still a lot of question marks in the cornerback room. You know, who's going to start? I think it'll probably be Arnold opposite of Carlton Davis week one, but, you know, just like bringing over Cam Sutton from Pittsburgh, you know, you think that Carlton Davis is going to translate, but until you see it, everything else on this team is really a proven commodity. Like, I like what they have at safety, linebacker, D-line, and then the offense has been humming for years now, and I think they got better. So, yeah.
Let's switch gears to the Red Wings for a minute or two. Nolan Bianchi on the Western Hotline, Detroit News, covering the Red Wings, covering the Lions, soccer in Detroit as well. The Red Wings offseason, they bring Kane back, which I wasn't expecting. I thought he might leave there, but he stays. And here are these teams at the bottom of the division, Nolan. I feel like Ottawa, Detroit, Buffalo are all trying to jump up with the big guys in the Atlantic, and they just can't seem to do it. The Red Wings, though, like, how frustrating, I guess, how much pressure is on them, given that, like, they were doing it all of last year, really, it felt like, until the end when it kind of fell apart.
Yeah. It's funny. I think I feel like I've had this exact conversation on this exact radio station like
probably
4 years ago about the Red Wings, Sabres, and Senators looking to make that next step.
And yeah.
Nobody has done it. But no, yeah, you're right. The thing that kind of stunk about it was you know, watching it, it was just it was their Achilles heel like that got them. It was just like an inability to play defense, to have a good goalie, and they just kind of. It was somewhat predictable, but, yeah, extremely frustrating. And I don't know that they got a whole lot better this offseason. I don't think they made any bad moves either. Like, I think if you kind of looked at the free agent market, you're kind of saying, okay, well, it makes sense that a team wouldn't want to go jump around in that pool. But I am kind of interested to see what happens if, you know, they're playing 500 hockey this year. And there's a reason for it. It's because they didn't get a whole lot better. Maybe they didn't get the production from their young guys that they quite thought they would. But yeah, it feels like a make or break year.
Yeah. Make or break. What's the break? Are we talking like a coach firing? I can't believe Iserman's in any danger whatsoever, right?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a coach fire. I think he has the most cachet maybe of any general manager who's ever existed here. So yeah, I think he'll be safe.
What is his, I mean, plan? Like, is they are kind of a mix right now of they've brought in these older guys in free agency the last couple of years, and then there's the young core. Are they just kind of waiting for the young core to step up more? Is that really what Iserman's plan here is?
It feels that way, and it's just been a long time. Like, they really haven't had anybody who's, you know, outside of Sider and Raymond, which were his first two draft picks, that have been able to come up and stay up. And so that they have a really good prospect pool, all these things. And it's like, okay, well, eventually you're going to get there, but, you know, time's going by and clock's ticking. And yeah, you're right. He has kind of, you know, jammed up the roster a little bit. He likes his two-way forwards. He likes his big body defensemen. And, you know, I don't know where they're going to have spots for this guy. He also made a pretty crazy move at the beginning of, I think it was right before free agency, where he traded Jake Walman, packaged him with a second. He was only on like a $3.4 million contract. Good defenseman for the Red Wings over the last couple of years. And they gave San Jose a second just to take him. So, I don't know. Everybody was like, oh, he's cooking. You know, he's got to have some other move. But I think that was just like, I don't want to say cope, but it was a little bit of like coping on people's behalf of like, I don't really know that something else is coming. And so far it really hasn't. I mean, they signed Tarasenko, they signed Kane, but they haven't been like monster deals. You know, maybe that money did still come into play, but so far it's still a pretty questionable decision.
All right, very quickly before we let you go, I know I saw Fox say this the other day that the U.S. men's national team for soccer is going to make some announcement about the manager job this week, whether Greg Berhalter stays or goes. Do you have a strong opinion one way or the other here? I'm very much on like, I got to see them do something. I got to feel they have to act in some way.
Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at. And you can't have a tournament like you just had and somebody not get fired. It was really ugly. I don't know.
Right.
I'd probably lean on the make a change side.
Yep. Jurgen Klopp. Come on, let's do it. Let's get him in here.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. That'd be great. Make him president too. I said.
Give him. I suggested giving him one state. Give him like 10 options. You can just, you want Montana? You can just have Montana. Just come coach the U.S. team.
And, right now.
Yeah. Nolan Bianchi on the Western Hotline. Appreciate the time, Nolan, and catching up, and maybe we'll chat again before the season.
All right, sounds good. Good talking to you guys.
Thanks, Nolan.
You too. Thanks, Nolan.
All right. Yeah.
Joe, I watch soccer from totally a 30,000-foot view. I am not into the names. I could not Kristen Pulisic, right? Is that his name?
Pulisic. You're close enough.
Pulisic, thank you. Sorry.
I'll give it to you.
I will readily admit to everybody, like, just it's not the sport that I get into, but I do love the big events, and I know when the U.S. is playing because it's all over my feed. I'll watch it. I'll be interested. So I'm not the guy that gets into it. Like, you're much more that guy. Jeremy is much more. I brought on Nick Mendola last week, and we talked about it after they lost the game. And, you know, I want to support USMT and U.S. women's team and all that. That's great. Love it. But I got a couple questions. Can we do that? I got a couple questions, or at least I can give you my thought, and you can kind of piggyback and let me know what's going on here.
Perfect.
About this whole thing.
Yeah.
If you want to take a few minutes on
Let's take a timeout. We'll do that when we come back. We got some more football to get to as well. So football and football. There's a game tonight.
Yes.
Which I actually, like, I'll link the two together. Tonight is Messi in Argentina against Canada in the semis of this tournament that the U.S. got embarrassed by. So we'll get to that, because not only did they get eliminated, and their neighbor to the north, who's never... You think the U.S. has been bad at soccer. Canada has never been anything, and there they are having the dream tournament that we've been waiting like 50 years to have. So, yeah, I'm ready to go for just a little bit on this. I'll get all my energy out on that. Time out here. We'll come back with some football. It's Jeremy and Joe. Sal's in for Jeremy. Your phone calls are also welcome. We had a Keon Coleman question from earlier that fans were getting in on would you take Gabe Davis for Coleman? And that could be twofold. That could be just for this year or for his entire career with the Bills. So let us know what you think on that front at 803-0550. This is WGR.
Thank you.
from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Okay, so that person talking there is Jesse Marsh. He is the manager or head coach, same thing, of the Canadian team that is playing Argentina tonight in the semifinals. How often in sports in general, and I would say soccer is not too different than like football and hockey for this. It's not like you'd hear that often. How often, Sal, do you hear a coach from an opposing team go that in on... Like, you get asked about another team that you're not even involved with right now, and you're like, oh yeah, lack of discipline. Pretty crazy.
So Jesse Marsh, tell me his background.
So he is American, which is, you know, some people are frustrated he's not their manager right now. Maybe he will be. He is American. He long career playing in the MLS, played for the U.S. national team like a couple games, and then was an assistant coach for the U.S. national team before going to coach in like Germany, Bundesliga, the Premier League. Like he's got a big resume for an American.
Well, that's why. But you're right. You don't normally hear it, but he's obviously invested, right? He's invested what happens here with the American team. So I get it. And you're right. You don't normally hear something like that, Joe. I just feel like last week, whatever it was, they lose Copa America.
Yep.
They don't advance. There's obviously a lot of very outrage or people upset, whatever. I bring on Nick Mandola. We chat about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Want to learn about what's going on here. He called it the golden generation or something.
Yep. It's often, this group of players has often been labeled as the golden generation. Yeah.
Here's the issue with me. I feel like we're here like every other year talking the same thing. Isn't this just the Sabres situation, but on a soccer scale every couple years instead of every year? Why is this happening every year? How come it hasn't changed?
It is. I would say this would be, I'll use the Sabres as a comparison here. This would be like, because of the player talent, it would be like if the Sabres had I'm trying to think of like what they could do. They had made all the moves you want. They have all the players you want, like talent through the roof, and then they're getting the same results. It'd be like if they signed Stamkos. They sign Stamkos and trade for Martin Nietzsche and do all some other stuff, and oh, they were still really bad? It would be kind of like that. Like, I guess the real difference is, in the past, when they've failed, it's often pointed out, well, yeah, like, their players aren't that great. Like, they're fine, but okay. They're a lot of MLS guys. They're, you know, they'll have two, three guys that are considered, like, world-class that play in Europe or somewhere else, and that's about it. But now, every single player on the team that starts for them plays in Europe and are considered, like, you know, not the best in the world, but world-class players. They play in the Premier League. They play in Germany. They play in Italy. And that's new. That's not normal. They didn't usually have players that were good enough to do that. And they're still getting the same results. So there's a very, I think it's a different sort of outrage now. Because now it's, wait, we finally have the players talented enough to compete with these teams. Why are we getting the same results as 10 years ago when we didn't have the players that were talented enough? That's a lot of what's happening right now.
I feel like, and I think you'd agree, I mean, it just seems like the last 30 years even.
Yeah.
I mean, geez, when did the American women win with Brandi Chastain? What year was that?
That is 98.
It's 90s. Okay, well, I go back to then even. When it was like, okay, here we go, U.S. soccer, and I know it's women and men, but especially the women, and they've obviously had a lot of success, we know that, but it was, even going back then, how there's this groundswell of soccer's becoming this big Americanized sport now,
yep,
and yes, it's always been in Europe and around the globe, and now we're finally doing it right here, and I will tell you, from a grassroots football, American football fan, and football, the sport of football has lost a lot of athletes going to soccer for a lot of reasons, right? Not even criticizing for that, but this has happened. A lot of younger people have gravitated to soccer over the last 20, 25 years in the United States. And it always feels like the conversation is, yep, it's coming and America's coming and we're doing this and soccer that, and it's growing. And you know what? I think from a level of, look at what's happening in MLS. Look what's happening around these youth leagues and all these teams popping up. Heck, we have what Nick's doing here in Buffalo, right?
Yeah.
And what other people are trying to do here in Buffalo. It has been amazing. Why hasn't that translated to winning at the top?
Right. Like Nick, I saw FC Buffalo's going to host the Women's Soccer National Championship coming up a little bit later in the year. July? Oh, no, in a couple weeks.
Because all that other stuff is true. It has happened.
Yeah.
Right? No, like
definitely.
All of the other stuff about how soccer is growing and it's becoming a much more American sport than it ever has been over the last 25 to 30 years
right.
is absolutely true. We see that every day, everywhere. You drive by Delaware Park on a random weekend and there is kids play soccer happening on like 10 different fields.
Right.
Okay, that is happening everywhere. But all of a sudden, but because of that, this was supposed to translate into we're also going to be much better on the national stage.
Right.
And it hasn't.
That's the anger.
That's what I'm wondering why that hasn't happened.
Yeah, that's the anger too. The anger right now is right, like forever it's been, oh guys, soccer's coming. And if you're not like a major soccer fan, you're probably rolling your eyes. I was like, oh, okay, I've been told that my whole life.
Yes.
But now,
yes.
Now it was like, I don't know that you'll hear it as much anymore. Like, I'm not out here saying soccer's coming. It's supposed to be here. Like, it's
right.
Supposed to be here right now that, like, this is it. This is what you wanted. You wanted a pipeline that's, you know, improved over what it once was and, you know, more fan engagement. And how does that translate? Better players, more talented players, players that can play in Europe, some of the biggest clubs in the world. Like, that's what you've been shooting for. Okay, I got there, right? These are great players that make it to giant clubs that have success on the club level, but then they go put on red, white, and blue, and why am I getting the same results that I always had? And that's where all of it really right now, and maybe all of it being put on one guy is unfair. I don't even know. It might not be. Like, it feels like, to go back to a Sabres comparison, I feel like Ralph Kruger is the coach again. I feel like it's just so bad. Like, it might just be one person. It really might. It might just be that Greg Berhalter, their manager, is so bad at his job that he really is dragging them down that much. Like, that's really where I'm at. This guy that we just played the clip of coming in, Marsh, who's going to coach Canada tonight, who's American and has a much better resume of coaching soccer than the U.S. guy does right now. I mean, Berhalter, who coaches the U.S., he's coached one MLS team, and he had a 35% win percentage. This guy had good MLS success, then went to Austria, then went to Germany in the Bundesliga, then went to the Premier League, and like he's going around the big clubs.
So what's
the
he doing
big
wrong?
There's politics involved.
Is it strategy? Is it okay? So this is great. So I'm interested in this discussion. I don't follow it like you do because I want to know this.
Yeah.
So to me, you tell me that, and it can be simple as the guy just sucks as a coach. That's fine.
Yeah.
It does not sound like that to me when you talk. It sounds like they have a systematic problem, not a coaching problem.
Yeah. Well, he determines the system, and I think that's part of his criticism, is that he plays a system that like he
No, I don't mean system X's and O's, Joe.
Oh, okay.
I mean a USA soccer system.
Okay. Okay.
From like you know what I mean? Like
how the
system works in the country to determine the players, who gets where, the politics of it, as you say. That's not on the coach. That's on to me. It sounds like it's a USA soccer systematic issue.
And I think that's completely fair. I think, absolutely. You want to, I mean, that's a deeper conversation than even I think I'm capable of having, but I have no doubt there are fatal flaws that soccer federation has that keeps this national team back. Like, no doubt in my mind at all that's happening. And I think the manager is evidence of that. His brother, the manager's brother, is on the committee that selects the coach. Like, it's hard to not think that there's just inner politics working is the only reason why the dude has the job he does.
It feels to me like the people criticizing him, and I'm not here to defend him. I don't know enough about him to defend him.
Yep.
Okay? It feels to me a lot like people not seeing the forest through the trees when you tell me the things you're telling me. You want to point at this guy. To me, it's an organizational, systematic issue within soccer and how it's treated and handled to get to that level and to determine who's where and who's doing what things and what roles.
Yeah.
To me, it sounds a little bit like I had Coley Harvey on last week, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Coley covers football for ESPN. I don't know if you know who Coley is,
okay? Yeah, yep.
But Coley was also at the U.S. track and field trials in Oregon. And I love track and field. I coach track and field. I love watching it. And one thing that's happened in track and field, and Coley and I touched on this, is the USA should always be near the top of all of the relays and sprints, okay? We should be, in men and women, they should be either gold or silver almost every year, it feels like, in your 4x1 and your 4x2, okay? Your 100-meter, your 200-meter, four people.
Mm-hmm.
But they aren't sometimes, and they have issues at the ends of, like, during Olympics. This has happened because the rest of the world has teams that literally, like, work cohesive for, like, years at a time. The U.S. treats it where they have this pool of sprinters that they put together kind of 6 months before the Olympics that you have to qualify to be in the pool. And they don't have this, they treat it differently, and it hurts them at the end of the day. There's a systematic issue to me with the U.S. sprints teams and how they and why they don't win at the end sometimes at the Olympics when they get there.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, I would bet heavily that is the same exact thing that's happening with the soccer team right now. 803-0550, if you have a thought on this, Robin Amherst does. Rob, it says on the thing, is a youth soccer coach, so might be more qualified to talk about this.
Help me out, Rob.
Yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, hi guys, how you doing? Thanks for letting me on.
Yeah, sure.
So one of the things that we do in this country with development of soccer, it's really a pay-to-play kind of sport here. So some of our best athletes, our best young soccer players, never have a chance to play where they're going to get exposure for the development.
Mm-hmm.
It's an affluent sport here. So some of the best programs, it could cost a family $5,000-$7,000 a year to have a child go through that. I used to travel to Europe quite a bit years ago, and the way the European programs work, the pro teams actually sponsor all of the youth programs. So it doesn't matter how much money your family has, they're truly looking for the best players. and that's not the way we do it here. It's more of a money-making grab, honestly, for some of the programs. But it's very expensive, and that's why we don't get our best athletes.
Yeah. Thanks, Rob, for the call. Well, that's disappointing, if that's how that works.
Soccer was supposed to be the sport that wasn't like that, though, wasn't it? It's not the expensive sport.
It's not hockey.
It's not golf.
Right.
It's supposed to be the sport that was the easiest for an entry point.
Yeah.
Is that what's changed?
I guess. That's how that sounds. Right? That's how it sounds from Rob there. That's disappointing. Yep. Hard to World Cup coming in 2 years, by the way, here in the US. Which is why another reason why there's a lot of angst. Like, come on. You got two more years to turn this thing around before you get embarrassed on an even greater scale. We'll see. They could, last thing on this, the guy we played coming in, Jesse Marsh, they could just hire him. They might just be waiting for Canada to be
Maybe
done.
He's politicking for the job in that piece.
I think he wants it. I mean, the way he sounded there, I've heard him on other podcasts talk about it. Even anger from him on how his interview process went the last time he interviewed for it, that he didn't get it. You know, he probably feels like now, you know, I don't know. What would he do? How close is he now to Canada? You know, he's coaching them through their greatest tournament they've ever had. I don't know. Would he feel like he's betraying them if he leaves right before the World Cup in 2 years? I don't know. But maybe not. Maybe he'll leave.
The problem I have talking about this is, again, okay, change the coach.
Yeah.
I'm just, from an outsider looking in, as a guy who's trying to understand this better, I don't know if it matters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the same thing people talk about with the Sabres, right? Does it matter who the GM or coach is if you have a systematic issue within the organization and how it's structured or what the perception of the organization is and not getting people here and all these things we're talking about? So it feels like to me, you know what it feels like to me? That whoever you hire has to overcome that, which is even another hurdle.
Which is possible, though, right? Like, I don't even want to say I agree with this, but I'm sure you've seen it. Usually it's in context of talking about the Sabres. How many people do we see on Twitter, Buffalo sports fans, say they got lucky with Bean and McDermott? It gets said a lot that they got lucky with Bean and McDermott. And I don't know that it's right. I don't ever say it myself. But, you know, that comes to mind for me when you say that is, well, okay, I might have a systematic problem, but if you happen to land on the right guy that's able to overcome that, well, I guess that's what I'm rooting for. I guess that's what I'm stuck rooting for. On this front. Because, man, you land on the right coach. You know, I know it's a different sport, but you land on the right coach, that might be all it takes to change everything. Maybe he can drive that. I don't know. It's a very optimistic view, though, that, one job changing can really lift everything up. I don't know any other way to be hopeful about it, though.
You need a guy like Sal Capaccio who doesn't know what's happening to go in there and say, I have no idea what is wrong here, so I'm going to evaluate it all, and I'm going to tell you what's wrong after doing it.
I love it. It's the reverse Ted Lasso. It's the reverse Ted Lasso. Former football coach.
I don't
want to
be the coach. I
want to
go in and tell you what they're doing wrong.
Oh, he wants to run the thing. That's what he...
Okay. No, I just want to tell you how you... I'm going to look and say, look, you're structuring all this wrong.
Okay. I like it. Go ahead. I'll let you through.
I have no idea.
803-0550 is the phone number. All right, soccer segment. Love that. U.S. got eliminated a week ago. They won't play for a while. 803-0550 is the phone number. We will talk some Titans coming up at 9 o'clock. Another team on the Bills schedule that we'll spend a few minutes on coming up at 9 with Tyler Rowland from Locked On Titans. And we'll reset on our Keon Coleman conversation from earlier because we still have some tweets coming in on that. And I'm sure people want to get on the phones on Coleman. That's coming up. Jody Biasi, Sal Capaccio here, and Jeremy and Joe. This is WGR. Got a couple phone calls on our little soccer conversation there. We'll get to some football. Tyler Rowland coming up at 9. Marcus in Rochester. What's up, Marcus?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I just want to say, first off, thanks for all that you do. I got to listen to you guys while I was in Kansas City the last 4 years, which actually brings me to my point of why I moved to Kansas City and why that previous caller wasn't totally accurate in talking about the European model, because we moved to Kansas City because my son was recruited to play for Sporting Kansas City, which so the MLS clubs do fully fund the academies from U15 through the U19. So if you know, it does cost a lot to play at the highest level academies in this country, which were originally built by USDA. So the USDA academies, one was in Rochester, so it was a Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse team, as an example. It did cost a lot of money, but the best of the best actually get recruited to the MLS academies, which fully fund. So I have paid $0 the last 4 years to have my my son playing at the best academy.
Yeah,
you know, one of the best academies in the country. And just to your point, like, we get this question all the time, like, why does U.S. soccer struggle with 340 million people and all the athletes in the world and all the resources? And I think I have an opinion on it, but I think there's a component of our obsession with size. And I'm going to give you a really specific example. The guy that recruited my son to Sporting Kansas City was the Belgium national team youth coach. And he became the technical director in Kansas City. And my son was undersized. And often, if you read that great book about, you know, early birthdays and bigger kids often get all the attention, they didn't obsess with size because they looked at it through a European lens of technical ability. And I think that's where we kind of need to get back. If you watch Spain, they don't have the biggest guys out there. I mean, you know, Bruno Fernandes, I mean, these guys are just average size. I mean, there's a couple of bigger ones, but they're obsessed with technical ability, right, and composure on the ball, and we don't have that. I mean, if you look at what Matt Turner did in that game as a goalie and giving the ball away, I mean, there's other examples of it. We're just smashing the ball. We're not protecting it, right, and treating it as
precious. Hey, Marcus, we're up against a break because I want to ask you a question before we go, because I don't want to cut you off, but we have to get going. So I want to ask you this, okay? First of all, thank you for this call, because as you know, I'm trying to I'm the guy. I'm not into it like you guys are, but I watch from the outside and say there's something else wrong here. It's not just switching up the coach, right? There's something going on in the country. Why this is happening? So we had somebody tweet us, and Thomas tweeted at me. And he says, and I want to know if you agree with this. I don't think this is right, but maybe it is. He says, the U.S. will never be able to hang with the rest of the world when we have football, baseball, basketball, hockey, golf, and so many other sports, because the other countries focus so much on soccer, and they play year-round. And what do you think about that? I don't know. All the resources we have here, all the athletes we have here, I don't know.
I think it's a lazy take. I think it's a lazy old take, to be honest. I think we have plenty of great athletes are giving up and wanting to play soccer. We're going to get there. I think it's coach related. I think there's still really good. I mean, you look at the team that we fielded. Everybody plays in Europe. There should be no reason we're not getting out of the first round of the Copa.
Yeah.
The players, yes, are we getting better at the players? Absolutely. And they look at where we were technically and how many players were in Europe 10 years ago versus 5 years ago versus now. We can get there. I'm not ready to give up this thing. I just think I think the coach is a major reason. And the Canada coach kind of articulated that. But just to be really clear, if there are kids who are really talented who can't afford these U.S. academies, there's funding. There's scholarships. There's things that they can do. I just think that, you know, that's somebody who just doesn't know the full landscape of it. And the really best players don't pay a cent. So I just wanted to make sure people understood that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Marcus.
Yeah, thanks, Marcus, for the call. Yeah. Good luck to your son. Good luck to your son, by the way. He's still in the academy?
No. He ended up getting a scholarship to play college D1.
Awesome.
In Indiana.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it, man.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
Thanks,
Marcus.
Cool.
All right. We got to hit a break, but I'm very glad I learned more even in that conference. Because, like, even you said, Sal, like, I'm not into it this much. Like, usually my interest kind of rests with just the team and not lower levels, but really, like, as you're pointing out and Marcus there, like, the impact on the team goes deeper than just who's on the team right now. So
correct.
Yeah. 803-0550. We'll get back to football when we come back. Tyler Rowling, Locked On Titans, is going to come up. I am so interested in Will Levis for this season. The Titans are on the Bills schedule, so as we bounce through their opponents, week 7 at home, Titans. That's one of the 1 o'clock games. We'll talk Titans with Tyler Rowland when we come back here on WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. In fact, thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBob's.com to play now.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.